This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
You heard that right. The phone lines are live, and so are we. And good morning, Mr. Bob Harris.
Good morning, Igor.
Well, we are here again, and it's wet again outside. Imagine that.
Imagine, yeah.
Well, you said it was going to be front-loaded this season, so we're still getting front-loaded with the rain.
Yeah, we are.
Okay. Yep.
But I still think sooner or later it's going to shut off.
Okay. Well, what's on the agenda today? And by the way, we are on Facebook Live, facebook.com/WESB1075. And you can see what Bob brought in, a couple of plants. And I guess we'll talk about those later.
Yeah, yeah. But first, I want to talk about this first because it's important. Right now, a lot of baby birds have hatched and small animals. So it's your responsibility to hold off on the insecticides and herbicides and all those sprays and applications that you may want to use. Hold off for a little while. Your plants will survive. Don't worry. So those animals can reach maturity.
So you're saying the baby raccoons have hatched and... The skunks have hatched,
yeah.
Too?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of amazing that so many animals, you know, birth this time of year. It really is. To me, it's amazing. And it's fun to watch, too. And by the way, the birds, you know, I encourage them. I feed the birds. Many people do. And I've got lots of baby birds out there and watching mama and daddy feeding them. And, they can be a huge benefit to your yard because birds, to raise their young, are going to need a lot of insects and other types of creatures to feed them. And so they can rid your yard of a lot of those pesty pests that are in your yard.
And you also get the beautiful sound of I Have Lovely Crows. So yeah, that's I love their song.
Now, some animals, you know, may be a problem. The woodchucks, you know, they birth too. And a lot of people get excited and think, well, I got to go out and trap them, get rid of them. Maybe, maybe not. All those baby woodchucks won't stay around very long. Only one woodchuck is going to stay. The rest half, mom's and dad's going to shoo them off, mostly mom. She's going to shoo them off because that's her territory. So they're gonna leave on their own. So sometimes it's better to wait than to get out there with the traps because a lot of times you trap it and take it off to somewhere else. That's going to be instant death to them because they're in a territory they've never been before. And the predators are going to prey on them or they're just not going to be able to survive in that new territory.
I didn't know that. I figured, yeah, just they'd make their home. I mean, they have a chance, right?
They do have a chance, but it's very slim.
Well, they can't live under my mother-in-law's house, so I'm going to bring them to the forest here at the station.
There is that, too, that if you really think they're doing damage to your property, then something's got to be done.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they're cute as all heck, though.
Yeah, yeah, true. Okay, so that took care of that. The hanging baskets that you got for Mother's Day are early. Some care tips that are important. Your hanging basket doesn't want to be wet all the time. You got to let it dry out before watering it again. Watering frequently changes depending on the sun and the rain and the wind. Some days you may not have to, well, lately, if they're catching rain, we haven't had to water our hanging baskets. When a hanging basket does dry out, though, slowly water it. Don't just dump the water in there. You got to give that soil a chance to absorb that moisture you're putting in there. If you just dumped it all at once, a lot of that water just going to run through and out the bottom. And your hanging basket is going to need immediate, as soon as you get it home, after the first couple waterings, you're going to have to start fertilizing. And that's that soluble fertilizer, they call it. The mixing instructions will be on the fertilizer package. And try to fertilize every 2 to 3 waterings to keep it looking happy and healthy. One more fact, that if your hanging basket seems to be getting long and leggy, it's probably due to not quite enough sun. Most hanging baskets like a lot of sun, so you may have to switch positions or give it a little vacation every once in a while. Set it out in full sun so it can enjoy that.
Sunbathe a little bit.
Yeah, sunbathe a little bit. And that can be with its blooming, too. Sometimes you get it home and it has 50 blossoms on it, and then all of a sudden you notice there's only 20 blossoms. Probably due to not enough sun and fertilizer. So it's a good idea to give it that vacation, get it out in the full sun, give it a good fertilizing, and wait a few days, and then you can hang it back up, and it'll probably start blooming again for you. It takes time. You know, it's not going to happen overnight, but that's some of the hints to keep that hanging basket going strong.
Great. And the phone lines are open again if you have a question for the Master Gardener, Bob Harris. So give us a call, 814-368-9372. That's 368-WESB.
Another one that has to do with the animals.
What's
you
that?
Know, the deer, too.
Oh, the deer.
Lots of deer. And I've been experimenting this year, so I thought I'd let you know. You know, and there's no scientific fact to this yet. So I've been experimenting. I work on a property that has a lot of deer. And they tend to eat a lot of the plant material. And I've tried different things all through the years, and with not a lot of success. This year, I'm trying cloves.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that a couple weeks ago, that cloves might be something to try out. Well, what's your experience?
So far, extremely successful.
Is that right?
The deer and the rabbits and the woodchucks are leaving those plants alone. So I just thought I'd pass that on.
Some specifics? What are you using?
What am I using?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and where and how much? And
I was going to buy it off the shelf. You know, a little jar of cloves is pretty expensive. My wife found on probably Amazon, it was, where I can get a great big bag, a 1 pound bag or 2 pound bag, for less than that little tiny jar off the shelf. So I've been using that, scattering it around, and I've only had to apply it once. Only once. And so far, it's kept the deer and the other animals away.
So I wonder how close they get to until they realize, oh, I don't like this.
Probably their noses are a lot more sensitive than ours, so they probably don't have to get very close. And if you've ever smelled cloves, you know, they do have quite a powerful scent. That throws that animal off, you know. That's how it's really working, and it's through scent. And that clove scent seems to throw them off. It doesn't seem to work with chipmunks, but the deer and the woodchucks, it's really working very well.
Okay,
so good. I thought I'd just suggest that. Mm-hmm. Another thing, and I think I mentioned that this last week, I better talk about slugs a little bit, because it's been wet and cool. Ideal conditions for the slugs to multiply. And they can be very discouraging, because they can all of a sudden destroy that little marigold right overnight. So there are slug baits out there and different materials you can use. But being careful because of all the baby animals out there, a good way to apply that slug bait is to take a saucer, put the slug bait down and the saucer upside down over it. Now, it looks like nothing can get in there, but the slugs can. They'll go underneath the lid, and then they'll feed on that bait there and, of course, die right there. So the birds and the small animals can't get to those poisoned slugs.
Oh, I see. I was going to say that is the bait poisonous to the other animals?
Or? Yes, it is.
Okay.
And that's the reason you really want to protect that bait, because it can be poisonous, especially, you know, baby birds and rabbits and all them things. They haven't developed their knowledge enough about poison. So just like your child, you know, it's got to try everything.
Yep, yep.
So try to protect that slug bait from other animals getting into it. Because, again, those birds are pretty important to your yard. They're going to really help fight all those insects for you.
Okay, great. So slugs use saucers and put the poison underneath that.
Yeah.
And then everybody will be happy, except the slugs, of course.
Except the slugs, yeah.
Oh, well.
You know, and if you want to do the saucer with the beer, that's okay. It works too, but...
No, what's that?
You put a little saucer right side up, dump some beer in there. The slugs are attracted to the hops that's in the beer.
Oh, okay.
And they go in there to get to the hops, and of course they drown in there. Now that's not going to, as far as I know, not going to hurt anything else. And it does work to a point, you know.
But you still die happy.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you have to refresh it from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, that's, and lastly, my favorite way is using a little bit of salt from the salt shaker.
Something about watching a slug melt just delights you?
Yes, it does, because I know I'm protecting my plants.
Yeah.
So early in the morning or late in the evening, you go out with your salt shaker, and if you see those little slugs crawling around, just give it a little shake over. It only takes one or two kernels of salt out of your salt shaker to destroy that slug. And you can be very successful with that. That's the only way I take care of slugs at my house, and I keep them under control quite a bit. I don't think I've lost any plant slugs since I've been doing that years ago.
Now, is there any way to, like, preventatively, like, pre-salt the ground, like, around your plants you're trying to protect?
No, I wouldn't recommend that, because salt can be very damaging to the plant.
Oh, okay.
But when you're just applying a couple grains of salt, you know, one little shake of the salt shaker, that's really not going to do much damage. We get enough rains that it's going to wash away in no time. But not to pre-apply. I don't think that would work as well. It's got to be that fresh kernel lands on that slug.
Okay, wonderful. Any other little bullet points you wanted to hit before we take a short break here for Worth W. Smith?
No, let's take a break.
Okay, and then we'll talk about what you've brought in.
Yeah.
Some lovely plants. So we'll be right back with more Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith. It's B107.5 FM.
Is your lawn looking a little brown and ragged? They have what you need at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find many options in the line of garden hoses, sprinkler heads, and fertilizers to turn that lawn back to the lush green carpet that we all love. But why stop there when you see the variety of decorative stone pavers, mulch, railroad ties, and landscape timbers? Let their staff at Worth W. Smith help you turn your backyard into the oasis you're looking for. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. I'm Igor, and with me as always, the Master Gardener, Bob Harris.
Okay, I brought a couple perennials in. I'm all done with the annuals that I've been bringing in and showing for the start of the season. Now it's time for the perennials.
Okay, now you have a pair of some different green plants that I'm looking at. What do
yes.
we have here?
And I'm starting out with the two toughest perennials on earth. The first one here, this big leafed one, is a hosta. And it's kind of an amazing story. The hosta was the very first imported perennial in America. Was brought to Salem, Massachusetts. It's still surviving there.
Where did it come from?
China. I'm sorry.
Oh,
it came
okay.
from China.
Oh.
And that really shows on the record the first imported perennial. There was a lot of plant exchange even earlier, you know, since man first landed on this continent. And so the hosta, this one in particular, has a grayish blue leaf color. Now, that's due to tiny hairs called trichomes that are on that leaf. So that one is basically deer-proof.
Yeah, it almost looks like a coating, you know, just from over here. But I thought maybe it was like some kind of waxy kind of thing. But
there is wax, too. But there's
little fine little hairs.
Fine little hairs on that makes that, because really it's a green leaf. But with those hairs and that wax gives it that kind of a grayish look. And, of course, the deer, with their sensitive mouth parts, they can feel those tiny hairs. So they stay away from that particular hosta. Other hostas, they love to feast on it. But again, maybe try those cloves, and they'll keep the deer away from your hostas. So that's one of the first imported perennials in America. And they just live forever. There really is no lifespan. Most plants have a lifespan, but the hosta does not, as far as I know. It can live for hundreds of years.
Isn't this what you say you sometimes find in the woods, that you, that's evidence of a house that used to be there hundreds of years ago?
Yep. First of all, the daffodils you'll see, and then maybe a lilac bush, but hosta and daylily, those perennials also are evidence of a structure that was there, a home probably.
Wow. And they just live that much longer than a structure would.
Yeah, they do. They just live forever.
Just about immortal.
So, nice plant. Most of them enjoy a little protection from the sun. So they're shade lovers, but there are some that will enjoy full sun too. And there's a lot of different varieties. There's this here kind of a grayish, bluish leaf. There are green leafed. There are white and green leafed. There are yellow leaves, and it goes on and on. Different flowering types. I found that a lot of people really dislike the hosta because the flower can go up 2 to 3 foot high and bloom. And then when it's all done blooming, the people really hate that because they got to go out there and trim that down. A lot of hostas have a short blooming stem that don't go way up, that only go just above the foliage. This is going to be one of them.
Oh, okay.
Just above the foliage. But the neat thing about those blossoms, and to me it's no big deal to go out there and clip them off when they're done, but that'll attract more hummingbirds than just about any other plant. The salvia and the hosta are really draw in the hummingbirds. And quite often the hosta will have a real nice scent to it. So if you plant a nice group of them, you'll be able to smell that scent. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. Now, the specific, how do you pronounce? What kind of hosta?
Yeah, this one in particular. It's Halicon. Halicon hosta.
And so that's not the very tall stem with the flower. That's the shorter one.
Yeah.
And this one has those fine hairs and the wax. So if you have a deer problem where you are, this might be the one for you.
And there are dwarf hostas and even larger hostas that can get, you know, a leaf that's only, that's about a foot across.
Wow.
There, as a matter of fact, there are close to 1,000 different hostas now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who could keep track of all of
them? Yeah, the Hosta Society does.
Oh my goodness.
So they're really nice. Now, if you prepare the ground that will hold a bit of moisture, you can grow most hostas in full sun in Bradford. So keep that in mind too. Hostas, very versatile plant, live forever, give you some nice blooms and some terrific foliage, and very, very little care.
Yeah,
very
I was going to say, yeah, forgiving if you overwater slightly.
Yeah, or underwater. Mm-hmm. It's very forgiving. And they tend to grow to the point where you can dig and divide them, and then you'll have more hostas, like the next one I'm going to mention, and that one over there with the lighter leaves.
Yeah, the lighter color leaves, closer to the camera, yeah.
This is the daylily.
Oh, okay.
And again, that's one of the hardiest plants in Bradford. And again, they can grow, and you can they'll multiply and you can divide them. They multiply by the root system, not by a seed. You know, some people try to propagate them, we call it, or grow more by seed, and that takes years and years to do. So they also multiply off the roots. They're one of those types of plants that can multiply two ways, through pollination and seed production, or through increasing their root and stem and growing bigger and wider. And, of course, both of them can be dug, divided every so many years. Every 5 years you can dig and divide them, and they make more plants that way. But then you'll notice the two of them together. One has the great big foliage. The other one has the fine, thinner foliage. That's important in your garden, too, that leaf texture, not only flower color. A lot of people forget about leaf texture. One plant makes the other plant show up even more because of the difference in the leaf texture. And, of course, that makes it nice for when they're not flowering, because most perennials have just a short window of flowering. They're not like an annual that flowers all season. So keep in mind leaf texture, too, different leaf size and different heights, too. So that makes it important and a much better looking perennial garden that way.
Now, if these start to get too tall, are you able to like trim them back like halfway through? So like, say if you have, if you planted one of them in front of the other, you know, and it's blocking view of your second plant, is there any way to kind of shape it or keep it down?
No, there isn't.
So you have to really pre-plan and figure out which one you want closer and farther away.
Yes.
So of these two, which one will be taller?
Those are both going to grow the same height.
Okay, so
those particular plants, yeah.
So don't plant them in front of each other.
Yeah, but there are others that, like I said, there are hostas that are going to be extremely small, only 3 or 4 inches tall, 6 inches wide. Those are real dwarf ones. There's going to be daylilies. This one's only going to grow to a foot, foot and a half tall. There are some that are going to grow 3 foot tall daylilies, so that they could go behind a larger plant.
At the end of the season, do you have to trim these down, trim those back, or you just let them be?
That's a good question, and that's up to the gardener. A lot of people like to leave them over the winter. Of course, the leaves will all die back and head to the ground. Now, that may make home for some of the beneficial insects, like the bumblebees. And some people like to just, at the end of the season, after a frost, cut it all down, clean up the garden. Either way works. So that's just your choice, you know, whether you want a nice, neat, and tidy-looking garden through the winter, or you want to leave a home for the beneficial insects through the winter. So that's just totally up to the individual.
But either one's just perfectly healthy for the plant itself.
Yes, yes. Okay. Now, early spring, it may benefit you to go in, and if there's a massive amount of leaves still laying there, it may benefit you to go in there and pull them back and pull them out so that lots of sun can get into that area and that plant can start regrowing again quickly. Although, if you don't, they're still going to grow out of right through the dead foliage and be fine anyhow.
Now, this daylily that I'm looking at, I'm noticing some of them are, they have a brown spot and they have a bent leaf. Is that something to be concerned about, or just leave it?
Just leave it. If it bothers you, just clip that leaf off. It's really no big deal. Like all plants, their leaf is only going to be good for so long. Even a tree, I should talk about evergreen trees, like a pine tree. A lot of times, a lot of needles will drop off, and people get all excited saying, what the devil is my pine tree dying? No, those needles on a pine tree are only good for about 3 years. Then their vascular system starts to get plugged up, or too much dust has accumulated over there, so they can't do the job that they're supposed to do, so the tree gets rid of it, or the plant gets rid of that leaf. So typically, you know, on a healthy plant, that's just common. They're going to get rid of leaves once in a while and grow new leaves.
Okay, great. Phone lines are open, by the way. If you have a question for Bob, 814-368-9372. That's 368-WESB.
One more thing about these two perennials that I've found through years and years of playing with them, they don't need fertilized.
They don't?
Okay. Yes. Most of your perennials, if your ground is prepared correctly, you don't need to fertilize. Unless you want them to grow faster and bigger and spread more, then I would recommend some fertilizer. But most generally, these plants will always be able to find some kind of food, so they really don't have to be fertilized. Not like your annuals and vegetables. They got to be fertilized. Yeah.
So you got to fuss with those a little bit more, but these are kind of like more of the Ron Popeil of plants. You set it and forget it.
Yes.
And they do their own thing and they just go.
Exactly, yeah. Now, through the year, I'll be bringing in perennials that struggle a little bit, I'll say, in this area. And they do need a little bit of extra care. But these, the hostas and daylilies, you plant them and forget them. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it.
All right, great. We have about 3 minutes left in the show. 814-368-9372 for your question for Bob. We're also on Facebook Live, facebook.com/WESB1075. You can leave a comment on there as well if you have something to say or ask. We're here for you. And what else do we have today?
Last week I was talking about new gardeners and how to get ready for gardening. You know, what's a reasonable size and when to plant. A reasonable size, you know, can be anything from a container, which is becoming more and more popular because containers can move quite easily, especially for the new gardener. They plant a container and find that plant isn't doing well. Well, maybe it's a little shady, so we can move it to a sunny spot or vice versa even. So the size can just depend on the container, and any container can work. Any container. Just have to have some drainage holes in the bottom. That's so important. Got to have drainage holes in the bottom. And when to start planting, it's now. Now and right up to, oh gosh.
4th of July?
Even past. That brings me to a point. Some people get excited and say, geez, I missed the season. Some of my best gardens that I ever grew, I didn't get to put in till July 4th weekend.
Whoa.
When I finally got time off, because my career, you know, other people came first. My house came last.
Right.
So once in a while, I didn't get to do it until 4th of July. And I was just amazed because the ground is nice and warm. The pouring down rains and the big winds are all over. I planted my gardens and they ended up being my best gardens that I – without a doubt, my best gardens that I ever had.
Now, what are some of the successful plants that were included with that?
Oh, it's all the vegetables. All of the vegetables.
All of them.
Yep.
Cucumber, tomato.
Yeah, yeah.
Onion?
Onion, yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then a lot of the annuals and perennials and trees and shrubs. You can plant a tree and shrub any time of the year. There is no good time or bad time. Anytime the ground isn't frozen,
right. You
can plant a tree or a shrub and a lawn. So don't be concerned that you missed the window because you didn't. No, it still goes on and on for quite some time. And sometimes it's even beneficial. I'll talk about just a tomato plant. You bought that tomato plant at the end of May, little tiny thing. You put it out in that cold soil and all the rain and so on. It's not growing a whole lot. That one in the greenhouse is still growing because it's in a protected environment. So by the time you get it July 4th, that thing is huge and probably has a couple tomatoes on it already. So sometimes you're even ahead of the game by waiting.
All right. Sounds great. And with that, we're out of time.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So we'll be back next week.
Yep.
And I'm sure we'll talk about something new and exciting and have something else to look at. And if you have any questions in the meantime, you could email us, garden@wesb.com. You can watch the show on demand on Facebook Live and listen on the on-demand button on the listen tab on WESB.com. And Mr. Bob Harris, thank you again.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk next week. The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith on B107.5 FM.